the open.
Put those mics in front of you.
You dick.
Charlie, it's very simple.
You said surprise you.
You are fake news.
Stop with the media bullying.
Charlie,
stop the media bullying.
Like most of your stories, it's false.
You shut your mouth, you bastard.
But we have some bad hombres here, and we're going to get them out.
Hot dog. Man, no shooting, no shame to my game.
What happened, Bob?
You said to surprise me.
Yeah, but by changing it, yeah. No, I'm pissed. You just made a bad day worse, man.
I like. I wanted to get your reaction to it. We'll go with that.
Joe Walsh. Dude, where'd you grow up? At Pine Knob?
Close, yeah. And it'll always be Pine Knob to me.
It's always going to be. And I have no idea why DTE, if they can't keep my power on, right, is buying Pine Knob and doing commercials and trying to tax my home for buses. I have no idea what they're doing over there.
Well, they're not taking care of the power. That's for darn sure.
My God, dude. You want to know what? Why I was late. I was prepared for the show, and I got a knock on the door. So I look out, still in my underwear. And it's a wild-eyed woman. Crazy looking. Crazy, right? Eyes popping out of her head.
At your front door?
Yeah. Charlie LaDuff? I said, oh, shit. I don't know if it's somebody serving me a summons, a subpoena, whether she's there to take me out. I was kind of nervous, you know, I mean, because I've gotten that in this town. My tires slashed, death threats, and
no one likes the truth.
Yeah, I wouldn't open the door for her. And then she said, you met my mother at church, and she's always wanted to talk with you because she loves you, and she's dying of lung cancer.
Oh, that's heavy.
I know. Like, would you please come over? I said, of course. But, you know, you always got that Detroit on your mind. Like, you know, it's a lot of enemies, man. Hey, Jason, I'm. What'd you tell me? So somebody in City Hall's listening?
Yeah, so we check, you know, the traffic, where everything comes from, and you got one listener in City Hall. Don't know who. There's one.
I bet you got more than one.
A lot of fans at City Hall. I got a lot of fans.
They're paying attention.
And some not so much, right? Well, anyway, welcome back. We did pretty good on that.
Really good.
Opening episode, right?
Really good.
What did we do?
About 10,000-15,000 downloads by the time we're done.
Wow.
Wow.
Pretty good for no advertising.
Pretty
thank
good
you
for a first week.
Thank you all for listening. Spread the word if you would, because this is no bullshit news. This is getting around the superficial and trying to get to it. So, look, this week, okay? This week was a big week in history. This weekend marks the 10th anniversary of the collapse of the Wall Street Bank Lehman Brothers, which you all know began the economic calamity that washed over the planet. The middle class lost and populism won. From Britain to Italy to Mexico to Brazil to the United States. And in this country, no place got hit harder than Detroit, because this is also the 5-year anniversary of the city filing the largest municipal bankruptcy in the history of the United States. And it was principally settled on the backs of city workers, more specifically, people like police and firefighters. And since this week also marked the anniversary of 9/11 and our enshrinement and our gratitude to America's first responders, we thought we'd talk about cops and firefighters in the city of Detroit. And the question is crime really down? Now, you'll hear the police chief and the mayor say it is. The media's not so sure. You're getting mixed signals. But the statistics, the citizens, the police officers themselves say that's a can of shit. The police here in Detroit, America's most violent city, are among the lowest paid in the United States while we write checks for billionaire developers. And so, demoralized Detroit cops are heading out the door. So today, we're going to hear from the police themselves. In studio with us is Detroit Police Association Union President Mark Diaz. Hey, Mark.
Hey.
And you're going to hear from a cop on the beat. And it's also the 10th anniversary of the death of firefighter Walt Harris, who died at the end of an arsonist match. So, What the fuck is this stuff, Mark? What'd you bring?
Well, you know, I figured, you know, you're going to be sitting around a lot smoking cigarettes and having a cup of coffee, so I brought you a little DPOA swag here, our 2018 DPOA coffee cups that we like to give to our supporters. And so...
Oh, so you brought bribes?
No, this is not a bribe.
This is bullshit.
This is not a bribe.
We don't take stuff.
No, that is not a bribe.
No, I'll take it. It looks good.
We don't take stuff.
I'd like one.
I'd like it.
Okay, yeah? Here's what we're going to do with this. Nah, man.
Damn.
Get your swag the fuck out of here. Not for sale. No bullshit news. All right, anyway. Mark, is crime down in Detroit? You're the head of the Police Officers Association. You got what? Over 20 years on the job?
24.
Yeah. Is crime down?
You know, you're asking me, and I'll tell you, I can look at the stats and the data that's provided to me by the chief of police and by the mayor's office, and I can tell you what they're telling me, and it's what we're seeing reported in the news. And that would be that the crime is, in fact, air quotes, down. But, you know, I can't help but say that when I look at the conditions of the city of Detroit, when I look at the city as a whole, you got to take the most important variable into consideration, and that is the people who live there. And so you ask the people who live in Detroit, you ask the people who live out in the neighborhoods, and when you ask them, is crime down, the answer is a resounding no.
And do you believe them?
Why wouldn't I? They're the ones living there full time. They're the ones who are calling 911 for their crisis calls for help. So when they say to me, crime is not down, when they're asking me if I can speak with the commanding officer in their precinct to get more proactive patrols, and I have that conversation, and I look at where our run count is compared to our number of police officers we actually have in the field, I can't help but believe them, because I know today, as I sit here before you, I have a fraction of the number of police officers out on patrol that I had 24 years ago when I first became a new police officer. That being, 24 years ago, we were well over 4,000 police officers. And I'm not talking about the command officers and the supervisors. I'm talking about the boots on the ground, the guys answering your crisis call for help. Back then, it was 4,000. Today, 1,600.
Well, I'll make it simple because people are going to say, well, the population dwindled. Let's just go like this. When we declare bankruptcy, there's about 2,000 officers. Now there's about 1,600. That's a fall of 20%. So less cops making less money, responding to less crimes makes crime go down. That's what we're being fed.
That's what we're being told. Again, but talk to the people in the community. What are they saying?
And then, you know, Bob prepared something, didn't you, Bob?
I did. It's funny because you said, you know, we hear it on the local news that the crime's down. Yeah, we hear that when we're talking to the chief or the mayor or someone like that. But we do more crime stories than ever before in my 20 years of being at Fox 2. I mean, we're doing shootings all the time.
So what's the citizen to believe? You know, you're being fed a bunch of crime, and then you're being fed a bunch of lines saying crime's down, and...
But you're seeing it on the TV that it's not, you know, because, I mean, we go because that's what we do.
Well, you look at any network, right? I mean, no matter what the news entity is and what they're reporting, and what they are reporting is crime every day. I mean,
yeah.
We turn on our TV today, and we're going to see that, unfortunately, we had a 5-year-old child who was killed just last night. And we hear those stories. I hate to say that, you know, it's common, but it's all too common. That's the reality. It's happening all the time. We're getting this every single day. We're hearing the media reports of crime in Detroit. I don't care what day it is. If you tell me you can turn on the news and you're not going to hear about a crime committed in the city of Detroit that's actually newsworthy,
then you're not watching Detroit news.
I don't know what news network you're watching, but if it's pertaining to Detroit, it's going to have something to do with crime.
All right, Bob. Let's for the listener, this is just for you to think about that. We're gonna play a montage here of what you've been fed, and just think about what you're hearing and the conflicted messages in this thing.
All right.
We begin with breaking news on Detroit's West Side. A manhunt underway after a teenager is shot and killed while changing a flat tire.
Detroit police are investigating a shooting on the city's east side that left one woman dead and three others injured.
It happened around 12:30 this morning right here in the parking lot of Spotlight Liquor, where police say one man walked up to a red Dodge Durango parked there and just started shooting.
The young man is gunned down while standing inside a party store on the city's west side.
The cold-blooded killer is still on the loose.
We continue to follow breaking news from overnight. A man was shot and killed outside of a party store. This happened near Warren Avenue and Vaughn Street.
Detroit police are investigating the early morning shooting that left three people dead, including one teenager.
Breaking news that we're following from Detroit's west side. That is where, sadly, two people have been shot and killed at a gas station.
Criminals be warned. The Detroit Police Department has sworn to be indebted to the fight against crime. It's no secret that we've seen an uptick in violence on the west side of town. The community absolutely has to step up and get involved. We, the police, cannot do it alone.
Detroit police are investigating a shooting on the city's east side that left one woman dead and three others injured.
A man got out of a black Crown Victoria and shot at all four of the passengers. A 29-year-old mother was killed.
More sad news this afternoon out of Greektown. Four people are recovering in the hospital this afternoon after a shooting in that neighborhood.
An unimaginable scene of violence tonight in Detroit.
A mass shooting at a barbershop.
Breaking news that we're following from Detroit's west side. That is where, sadly, two people have been shot and killed at a gas station.
A manhunt is now on for the gunman who opened fire, killing a man and injuring two children.
We begin with a late-night drive-by shooting that happened last evening, Jesus. Leaving one woman dead and three others injured on Detroit's east side.
There were so many shootings last night. In fact, there were eight shootings in the city of Detroit, five different scenes, one here, one over on East State Fair as well. They're trying to figure out how many of these are connected.
We, the police, cannot do it alone. So the people who live in these areas are going to have to be willing participants. To have an urban peace treaty, I got to believe that that's going to make a difference, because part of that commitment that these young people will make certainly is a commitment to be part of the solution and not part of the problem.
And there you have it.
Yeah, but you know, it'd be nice to hear what we hear over and over is the chief of police year after year saying there's this precipitous drop in crime, when he's arguing with the FBI over the crime numbers. It's a mess. I mean, how the fuck do you mow down a hamburger stand, right? And there's nothing, there's no evidence. No, it's two guys, 5'11", wearing dark clothes. That's what we have. What that says to me is there's not enough cops out there, Mark. Guys are ripping off trucks, driving through liquor stores, ripping them off, and they're not getting caught.
No, you're preaching to the choir. That's my mantra. I've been saying that for years, that we don't have enough police officers here in Detroit. We need more cops. Plain and simple. You know, we are struggling right now with our numbers that, as I pointed out earlier, they've been decimated from what they were. And at this point, our guys are just, they're breaking their backs to do the job we took an oath to do, which is to serve and protect. By that, our number of runs that we're responding to is such that it's really just keeping us from engaging in that proactive police patrol, which is going out there and engaging in those back in the neighborhoods to prevent crime. So we've gone from a position of being able to prevent to where we're reacting and we're responding. And when you
there's nobody hunting these crews or triangulating them or putting a decoy out there waiting for a guy.
You know, we do have entities that do that, but they're so small in numbers.
That means we don't got shit. We don't got shit.
Basically, what it comes back to is we look at the numbers. We listen to what Bob was just playing, and you know, and all these crimes that are being committed, and everything that's making the news, and all these atrocities being committed against our citizens.
Well, do you know why those make the news, Bob? Why is there so much violence on the news?
Well, the theory is if it bleeds, it leads. You know, but
it leads. Why does it lead?
Because it's easy.
Yeah.
It comes in, you can go out to a scene, you can talk to somebody, the grieving neighbor or the grieving family member. It's easy. And
it's like making grilled cheese sandwiches. You can flip them all day long. Take 20 minutes to put that together.
All day long. And my issue is it's never put in any context. You know, like, you know, we there was a shooting over here and the 5-year-old was killed last night.
Murdered, not killed.
Murdered. 5-year-old was murdered, but it's not put in any context with, oh, well, that was the 17th or 20th one this month alone, you know, so it doesn't give anybody, you know, and people see that on TV, and I don't blame them, but it just goes by. We're so desensitized to it. You're like, oh, gee, a 5-year-old. Well, at least it wasn't a 3-year-old. What the hell is that?
See, my problem is, it's more than just context. There aren't any stories about what's really going on out there. There aren't any stories about fake crime numbers. There aren't any stories about special ops. We don't ask why.
No, we don't.
Homicides don't get solved. That's missing. And that's the bullshit part of the news, and we're all part of it. Because we're not doing anybody a favor. We're not doing the citizens a favor. We're not doing you a favor, Mark. We're not doing the rank and file a favor. Maybe the politicos.
No bullshit news.
No bullshit. I'm tired of the bullshit.
Right. You know, and it is.
So later, you know, I'm going to play something later. I'm sitting in a car with a super cop, and just he's really just kind of telling the truth. And so we're going to do that. But guess what? We actually have an advertiser.
Right on, right on.
We have an advertiser. You whine enough, you'll get an advertiser. American Coney Island, founded by Gus Karros in 1917. It's Detroit's oldest family-run restaurant, and it's the original home of the famous Detroit Coney Dog with chili, mustard, and Vidalia onions. Do not put ketchup on it. Located in downtown Detroit at Lafayette and Michigan Avenue, it's a favorite place of cops, isn't it, Mark?
Yes, it is. They are great supporters of our law enforcement.
They are, and the food there is always fresh.
Absolutely.
It's always delicious, and it's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for all the homicide detectives out there. The dogs snap when you bite them, and the chili is an old family recipe made especially for and by American Coney Island. It's been featured on the Today Show, Andrew Zimmer's The Zimmer List, Iron Chef Michael Simon's Food Feuds, and the Travel Channel's Food Wars, where it won Best Coney Dog in Detroit. Can't get downtown? They also have locations at the Detroit Zoo and the D Hotel in Las Vegas. Or order a Coney Island kit straight to your or your friend's door. Just go to AmericanConeyIsland.com. You know what else, Bob?
What's that?
They sell craft beer there.
Yummy.
And the toilets are clean.
They are clean. They are clean. Anybody who knows, who drives around downtown, if you need a clean restroom, American Coney Island.
Yeah, because I'm looking after them now.
Oh, you do a good job.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You know why I like working down there?
Why is that?
Because it's real people going by. Yeah. It's really talking to a hard hat, couple of cops, a couple of electric workers, Latinos. English is their second language, and they bought my book.
Yeah.
Now, they didn't watch Fox 2 too much, probably Univision, but one of them goes, "Hey, man, didn't I see you on YouTube, man? Like, you were in California picking grapes, man." I go, "Yeah." He goes, "Oh, I like that one, man. That was fair, bro."
Respect.
You know, and that's the thing, man. Just mutual respect for everybody.
That's it.
Right?
That's it.
I'm not a hater.
Best Cheech and Chong impersonation I've heard all day long.
Hey, Lourdes! Hey, Lourdes! you want to see me turn this? Give me one of them mugs, one of them swag you brought.
No, you broke yours.
Let me see yours. I'm gonna turn it into a piece of fruit.
Don't break it.
I'm gonna turn it into a piece of fruit.
You're gonna use it for an ashtray.
Like Cheech and Chong, right? You know what I mean? Like, remember that?
I don't remember that.
You want to see me turn this this biscuit into a piece of fruit? And he rolls it up and puts it next to his cock and says, "Ain't that a peach?" Yeah. Hey, watch this one. See, Bob, here's the mug.
Oh, yeah, man, no, we're not taking no swag, bro.
No swag.
Shouldn't have gave it up, Bob.
I know I shouldn't have.
Hey, Mark, so you're bringing that up, man. The police dropped a guy this morning, right? He was the suspect in the shooting, murder of that 5-year-old and the shooting of her mother, who's in critical condition. So apparently the cops, you know, go to arrest the guy, knock down the door, and apparently points a weapon at him, a long arm, and they drop him. What are you hearing?
Yeah, I mean, other than what's been reported in the news, that's about it. And, you know, that's the one thing. I mean, it's a tragedy, no matter what. I don't care what side you're on, if you're anti-police, pro-police, or indifferent. It is, just as a human being, it is always incredibly difficult for a police officer when they have to engage in using lethal force. And I can tell you, in speaking with our officers after they are involved in situations like that, it's so hard. And, you know, our guys don't wake up in the morning and say, "I want to go to work and kill someone." That is the last thing our guys do. In fact, they go to work and hope to save lives. That's our mission. That's what we want to do. And when we're forced into situations where we have to use lethal force, I'll tell you what, the impact it has, number one, on the family of the person who was the deceased, when the impact it has on everyone surrounding, but especially that police officer. Everyone just forgets about that. The impact it has on that person, their psyche, what they deal with, and having to realize and recognizing that they were engaged in a situation where they had no other choice but to take a person's life and use that lethal force. It's the hardest. It truly is. And the number of post-traumatic stress disorder cases that we have within the law enforcement community as a whole is just astronomical. And, you know, we have officers who are throughout the nation who are literally walking around untreated for PTSD. And I'm not trying to scare everyone in by saying that, but yeah, you really got to take a big step back.
You got lunatic cops wandering around? Is that what you're telling me?
Not at all. Not at all. To the contrary. I'm saying you got guys out there who are putting their lives on the line and their own mental health just to keep people safe and to keep people alive.
That's true. Have you ever dropped a guy?
Unfortunately, I have.
Killed him?
Unfortunately, yes.
Really?
Yeah. And it's, wow. Like I said, it's not easy. It really isn't.
What happened?
Unfortunately, I was involved in a situation where an individual was, it was a suicide by cop, wrote a letter the whole nine yards, and it was, again, a terrible situation.
Take me through that. What happened?
Again, I don't know what his personal issues were, what he
so
was
So you
dealing
responded
with.
To a call?
Well, I was actually flagged down on a situation where...
You were flagged down. Yeah. Okay.
How long had you been a cop?
At that time, I'd been a police officer for about 5 years.
So you were a young guy, new in the
yeah.
job, basically.
Young police officer, right.
Wow.
So, I mean, and those are the things,
wait.
It's a possibility.
So wait, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So you got flagged down on...
Yeah, a person with a weapon who was basically holding this area hostage for the most part, and... They said the guy was shooting at cars as they were driving by. Unfortunately, you know, on approach, the person was out there and produced a firearm and threatened to take police officers' lives, and we had no other choice. I mean, everyone there felt, you know, in fear for our lives. And so, unfortunately, had to engage in lethal force. And I got to say, you know, the other officers who were involved, some of them had to take an extra time off to get their, you know, get their act back together and be able to get back out there. I mean, that is the unspoken reality of being a police officer. You know, it's glamorized in TV shows and in movies about police officers going out and getting into shootings. And it always seems like it's all, you know, cut and dry and there's no real after effect. But there truly is. And speaking with, you know, my officers, obviously being involved in a situation having to use lethal force myself, in speaking with these other officers who are involved in that, it's amazing how after years go by, a person's coping with it, but years go by and it just comes up and sneaks up on them. It's kind of like, you know, it's like that old, you get guys coming back from Vietnam or from war or over in Desert Storm or over, you know, anywhere overseas, and they come back from war, and it's like they're fine. And then years later, something
nightmares.
Just doesn't seem right. The nightmares kick in, right, the inability to be in a crowded setting. And that stuff we're seeing, it's becoming more and more prevalent in the law enforcement community. Again, we're just talking about the crime in Detroit. We're talking about what's reported in the news. Let's not forget, we have 1,600 Detroit police officers who are out there every single day who are not just hearing about it in the news, they're seeing it every single day of their lives. You got it. So that's something that we've really got to get a handle on. And this is not here in Detroit. We're talking something that's national. All of our law enforcement officers throughout the nation are in situations, they're called to the worst situations around.
Well, what happened after you... shot him and he's laying there. Did you rush to him or?
That's again. That is exactly what we do. Even when we're in situations where we have to engage in lethal force, you know, the first thing we want to do is provide aid, and that's what we do. You know, we try to keep that person alive. We don't want that person to die. You know, again, we have to keep ourselves alive and, you know, protect the lives of others, but we try to keep the person alive, and it's really difficult for it's a jagged pill for us to swallow when we have to use lethal force.
Were you asking me over there, man?
Well, I hear 1,600 officers. I hear all the bad PR, right, that we see every day, the media. How do you recruit? How do you keep up? How do you get more people on the street? I mean, budget aside, with the bad press the job gets, how do you recruit more people to do it?
You know, that's a great question. I have a friend who's a priest, and, you know, he once asked me that. He's like, you know, why in the world would you want to be a cop? And why would you want to be a cop in Detroit, the most dangerous city in the nation? The FBI says it all the time. And I asked him, I said, well, why would you want to be a priest? I mean, I could think of other things I'd rather be doing. I mean, I respect it, but...
Sure.
And as he said, it was a calling. And I can tell you with our law enforcement officers, it is a calling. And I don't know any other way to explain it. I mean, I've been a cop since I was 18 years old. And growing up, essentially, as a police officer, it's not for the pay. The pay is important. We'll talk about that in a moment. But it's not for the pay. It's for wanting to help others. And some people just have that natural drive that they want to help other people. And they spend their lives, they spend their careers, they dedicate not just their own life, but the lives of their entire families to doing just that, to keeping people safe.
So for you and the officer this morning, what happens after you take a citizen's life? Do you go into some kind of protocol? Is your weapon taken? Are you put on administrative leave? What?
Well, the first thing we do is make sure.
Because people want to know the process, you know, right. Because there's the cops are all in on it together and there's no justice. You hear that too. So tell us how it works.
You know, that is unfortunate. I mean, I do hear that.
So that's why you're here. You're going to tell us how it works.
Let me tell you what happens here. So when an officer is in that unfortunate situation where they have to engage in the use of lethal force, we have a peer support group in the Detroit Police Department that actually responds to make sure the officer at least offers some aid to the officer with respect to their psychological well-being, to be there, you know, and explain the process to them. There is the officer obviously has to report the circumstances of what took place. That's done.
Wait, this union official?
Oh, absolutely. We make sure the officer's rights are protected. Once an officer is involved in a situation such as use of lethal force, there is a warrant request every single time that goes to the prosecutor's office.
So a cop is...
So you have a person who's being forced to make a report, right? So if Charlie, if you were, God forbid, you were in a situation...
So there's a warrant, then you're going to be arrested.
Well, let's just put you in...
Is that correct?
If there's a warrant, the prosecutor's office approves it, then yes. But take yourself, for example. If you were involved in a situation where you were, you know, had to use lethal force as a citizen, not a police officer, you would be detained. They would ask you what happened. And if you wanted to say, you know what, I'm not saying anything, I want an attorney present, you have that right. Police officers have that right as well. But we are forced to make a statement. We're public officials, right? We have to make a statement. We have to write down the circumstances of what happened. Where you don't, we do. So we want
to
make sure.
So you have to make a statement as to what you did.
Certainly, absolutely, as well we should.
And yeah.
I mean that's fair because we're giving the police the right to use lethal force. So
we're putting people in the community to go out there with guns. And
they should have to explain when something happens.
But dig this with the spread of handguns. Right?
Yeah.
Carrying concealed weapon, open carry. The average citizen, the everyday person, doesn't have to do that.
They have a right, just as anyone else in the United States of America has a right to remain silent. They have a right to avoid self-incrimination and to have legal representation before making a statement. Our police officers don't have that right to remain silent.
Rigorous, six months of academy to know constitutionally when and when you cannot.
You got it. And that's why not just the 6 months of the academy. We're talking, guys, we have to go through the fatal force policy twice a year. We go back and we're at least twice a year. Our guys are going to our range and getting refreshers on making sure they're up to speed on shooting, but also up to speed on the laws with respect to engaging and using that their firearm in the line of duty. So our guys are training it all the time. But on that very same note, going back to what we were just talking about, you do have to keep in mind that we are, as I said, we're public officials. And if there is an obligation, we need to know what our officials are doing. You know, our law enforcement officers are out here to preserve and protect. Well, if they're involved in a shooting, it's appropriate. But that provision with respect to an officer making that statement is something that's for departmental use. Under Garrity provisions, that information cannot be used against that officer.
Explain Garrity. You mean that's...
Garrity is essentially a law that requires forces that officer to make that statement, to tell you the whole story about what happened. But that provision also it doesn't allow for those statements to be used against the officer in court.
Right. Okay. Interesting. So when you dropped a guy, you were sitting at home shitting yourself?
I was actually on patrol when it happened. But... I can tell you that I'll walk you through it. Yeah, I can walk you through it. I mean, when it happened, it was so surreal. It was we trained for this all the time, and it's unfortunate. It's not to say it's like a mechanical type situation, but, you know, when you recognize all the elements and you're in fear for your life, it's, you know, the training actually, it kicks in. And that's exactly how that goes down. But afterwards, you know, reflecting on that circumstance and, you know, right then and there in that millisecond, you have to make that decision to pull that trigger. It's the hardest decision anyone, I don't care who you are, it's the hardest decision you're going to make. But when you're a cop and you've dedicated your life to saving lives and now you're pulling that trigger, that right there, my friend, is without a doubt the hardest decision a police officer will ever have to make. So if you don't think these guys, myself included, are going to second guess that circumstance and relive it and replay it over and over again, was there another way? You're crazy, because that is exactly what we do. And that, unfortunately, is what leads all too often to officers who in the past have gone into self-medicating. We've had that situation where we've had to identify people who, you know, developed habits and addictions as a result of trying to cope. That's one of the things that led to Chief Craig when he came in. He was insisting on coming up with some mechanism to support these guys and give them that outlet to communicate and talk to others who've been involved in similar situations and give them the ability to get it off their chest and talk to them and get it and literally put it out there, hear the feedback and ways of coping as opposed to the self-destructive ways that all too often in the past were very prevalent. So it's a great thing. This peer support group we have, it's solid. I support it 100%.
How long did it take for you to get back on the job?
Me personally?
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you're sitting down. I was actually back to work the next day.
Wow.
What?
It just depends on the person. And I mean, my, you know,
see,
my...
See, I would think they would remove you.
Well, yeah, and...
Give you a timeout anyway.
Well, we're talking about 1998 right now, right? It was a different time. Today, no, we don't put the guys right back like they did then.
Wow. That's it. You know, the thing about the job that police officers have that blows me away is that, you know, because they get put up for ridicule when something like that happens or whatever. You know, everybody's like, oh, they, you know, they overstepped their bounds or whatever. People forget we're asking these guys to go into places that nobody wants to go to. You know, and
people you don't know answering a call, somebody you never met,
and every swinging dick out there's got a gun. You know, I mean,
what? Yeah, guns are ubiquitous. I'm, you know, it's got to be way harder than 98 to do the job.
Oh, absolutely. But you know, yes and no.
And
let me just keep
and
it
the,
all
and the
in perspective. I mean,
okay.
Now we have a lot of guns out on the street from people who go out and buy. You know, now it's easier to purchase a gun and carry a firearm in the state of Michigan, whereas opposed to in the past, you know, it was. You know, nearly impossible to get a concealed weapons permit in the state of Michigan. But
do you find that a lot of criminals have concealed weapons permits, or they just carry?
And that's the point that I'm making.
They just carry the gun. If I need a gun, I'm going to take my gun.
You got it. So when we start talking about,
well, like in the old days, though, you know, you saw a gun partially concealed. You're going to roust them. Now you can't. You can't just see a gun and go roust the guy.
Right.
But you were saying.
As I was saying. Yeah, I mean, the criminals are going to get a hold of a gun anyway, and it's difficult for me in my profession as a law enforcement officer and protecting law enforcement officers, not just here in Detroit, but in the state of Michigan and on a national level. When we start having that conversation about gun control, the reality always comes back to that one simple variable that criminals don't really give a damn about whether they can carry a gun legally or not. They're going to carry it.
We have some bad hombres here, and we're going to get them out.
Yeah, but I think the thought goes, and, you know, I'm a weapons owner, but the thought goes, if guns are all over the place, then it's easier for a criminal to get one. That's the thought. It's not...
Is it hard now?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, yes. It's really easy now.
Yeah.
Back then, it was harder.
In 24 years in law enforcement, I can tell you that I don't really notice a difference in the accessibility to firearms. I mean, I get it. You know, there are more people carrying them around legally than ever before, but, again, we're getting as many guns off the street illegally as we were in the past. They're getting them then, they're getting them now.
Yeah.
Well, actually, you're not getting as many guns off the street. I mean, the stats show that.
Well, unfortunately, our officers aren't able to engage in that proactive patrol we were talking about earlier, and that's a huge consideration when we're talking about not taking those guns off. Like I said before, you see a guy walking around, you're on patrol, right? That proactive patrol. And you see someone with that bulge that is the shape of a firearm. Yeah, when you have... you know, an extra 1,000 police officers out there to actually engage in that proactive patrol to look for that type of activity, yeah, sure, you're going to get more guns. I got 1,600 cops right now who are doing their very damnedest to keep up with our run count.
Just driving around answering calls.
It's not important. That's what I don't want to call it tunnel vision, but those guys have a mission.
That is some bullshit, dude. That is not policing, man. Well, you know, answering calls is part of it. It's part of it. But that's not all of it.
We don't want our guys to stop from going to your crisis call for help to look for a gun. I hate to say it. I want those guns off the street. Believe me, I want those guns off the street. The ones that are out there illegally, get them out of there. But when you call 911 because, you know, God forbid, you're, you know, you have a situation in your house where, you know, you have an intruder who's coming in to take your life, you don't want to hear that cop stop to shake someone down to see if he had a pistol on him. I want him there right now.
I want both. I want a strategy to prevent crime, and sure, I want you to respond to my crime.
Right. But
isn't that
you
what
call,
everybody
you
else
them,
gets?
You want us there right now.
Does Detroit, there ain't enough guys to do all that.
Well, that's what we're talking about. Doesn't everybody else get it? Don't the suburbs get it? Don't the rural counties get it? Well, why doesn't the city get it? Why is it that we can find $250 million, a check to write for a billionaire to build a skyscraper? That's Gilbert. We're actually giving him $250 million, a check that we're going to borrow the money for and pay back over 35 years at $16 million a year. Do we need police or do we need a skyscraper to pull business from the suburbs? What do we actually need for the long-term health of the city? And by the way, for those listening, that $250 million is not coming from the city. It's coming from the state. So it's coming from you, Oakland County. It's coming from you, Brownstown. It's coming from you, wherever you are in this great state that's listening.
It's coming from my retirees. I got $40 million a year coming out of my retiree health insurance and pension benefits that were lost, and that's where it's going.
You mean in the bankruptcy, in order to make things work, we took the retirees who put their 20, 30 years in. They're now 50 years old, and they have no health care. And when they joined up, they got the health care.
We're talking guys who came on the job before 1986, right? You know, we're supposed to take care of our elderly and our guys when they get up there in their years. We're talking about guys that came on before 1986 who didn't pay into Medicare. They didn't. They weren't allowed to pay into Medicare. So we're not talking about guys who are in their 50s. We're talking about guys who are in their 60s, 70s, 80s.
We're talking about all of them.
Who have no health insurance at all. They're not entitled to Medicare, period. So and they have no insurance.
Remind us why they weren't.
Wait, let that hang a minute.
That's a fact. That happened in bankruptcy. Our retirees lost retiree health insurance. And for our guys who came on before 1986, back when I was a kid in the sixth grade, those guys who were keeping me safe, well, they don't have retiree health insurance. And that was a result of the Chapter 9 bankruptcy in the city of Detroit.
Wow.
What are they doing?
Starving, to be blunt.
It's a fucking outrage.
They have to provide some kind of health insurance for their spouses.
Well, remember,
so they're paying $800 a month out of their meager pension checks to cover their health insurance needs.
Our old cops are eating cat food.
You got it.
And we're building hockey arenas.
Again, it's $40 million a year we're talking about. That is the total cost to provide retiree health insurance for all of our retirees. There's 12,000 between our active and retired. We've got 12,000 people we're talking about. And we're saying that, yes, we're going to put money everywhere else, but not into the people who gave their lives, put their lives on the line, and missed Christmases, missed taking their little kids out for Halloween. We're going to take that person. We're going to take their retiree health insurance from them.
See, I'm
right when they need it the most.
I'm a capitalist, but I'm not a crony capitalist. If you put what we're paying for the hockey arena plus the skyscraper, that's your $40 million, bro.
Oh, that far exceeds it. I look at the
checks we wrote.
The M1. You know, I mean, that's a great example. That's my retiree health insurance going down the street.
These are not tax abatements or like put offs. Like we're going to give you 10 years where you don't have to pay, or you can capture, you know, income tax or whatever. I'm talking just about straight up checks we wrote. And we can't find $40 million to honor the promise of people that honored their side of the bargain. And those catastrophically injured, shot in the eye, lost the use of their legs, what'd they get? $300 or so to go on the exchange?
No, actually, that's not altogether true either. I mean, we have officers who are currently, if an officer is injured in the line of duty, catastrophically injured in the line of duty, as I'm sitting here talking to you, that officer, let's say he's 25 years old, okay, new police officer, and he is he's injured, he's shot, and can't come back to work, can't work anywhere. Well, that officer's injury is going to be covered through workman's comp. As far as that officer and his wife and kids, no, they lose all of their, he has no other health insurance benefits whatsoever.
Wow.
Wow.
Recruitment play gets better.
Wow, yeah. And so, with all, look, I'm pro-cop. I like good cops. But this kind of thing, right, can attract not the best element. So, why is it so hard, you as the union president, why is it so hard to get rid of the bad cops that make all the problems, that the ones that, you know, are on the news?
So I can see on the surface where you would say, yeah.
I want you to talk straight, though.
I'm giving you the straight and skinny on this
one. Is it like you got to put up with the bullshit guys in order to protect the good guys?
Okay. Again, I'm just going to speak very plain and straight with you on this.
You got to.
On first blush, you would think, yeah, we're just going to attract the worst of the worst, right? We're going to attract the cops that just can't get hired anywhere else. That actually is not the case. We're actually attracting very quality police officers.
Understood. And I'm not saying that. Let's make this clear before I get rung up. Pro cop, I know a lot of them. Why is it hard to get rid of the bad cops? I'm not going to name names. You've known them. You're the union guy. You got your jobs to protect them. Why?
Well, sure, but I'll call it like it is too. I mean, there's half a percent of our police officers in the nation are there. That's that element that gives the rest of the law enforcement community a bad name.
Why can't we get rid of that 0.5%?
Well, we do. We lose those officers when that happens, and there is a process. Everyone is entitled to their own due process, and they're entitled to their day in court, if you will. But our issue we have right now isn't a matter of recruiting. We've recruited over 800 police officers in the last 5 years in Detroit. The problem is they're coming in, getting sworn in, they're getting their certification as a police officer, and they're going to the suburban departments who are paying them better. So these are quality. These are high quality law enforcement professionals who are taking, a lot of them take that opportunity to get their training here in Detroit and go elsewhere. But again, we still have guys like me 24 years later still here who are just dedicated to providing that protection in Detroit. Look, I became a cop in Detroit for one reason. And I remember when I was 18 years old, I'll say it today as I said it back then. I became a cop in the city of Detroit for one reason, and that is because I want to be where the cops are needed the most.
Because you wanted to be a cop. You wanted to be a police.
But I was afforded a dual income as well, where I wasn't relying solely on my income, which was incredibly meager. Being married, my spouse had an income. So I was able to sustain raising a family while engaging in my profession as a law enforcement officer. Not everyone has that. They're not afforded that opportunity. So you have a person who's relying on one income. They have to do what's best for their family, and they have to go to where they're going to make more money to provide.
Okay, I want to play you something here. I went out with a super cop. I know a lot of them. This is one of the dudes, and you know what I'm talking about. The elite.
One of my 1600.
Yeah, he's the guy. So first of all, we're just sitting there talking, and we're just watching the world go by, and there's a hooker. Did you know, talking about the economic collapse and working people not recouping what they used to have, did you know that a blowjob today, crack whore, costs about 10 to 20 bucks? Did you know that?
No, I did not. But
okay, good.
Bob,
then
Bob over here is going, really?
I paid way too much.
Do you know what the same blowjob was 10 years ago when Lehman's collapsed? What it cost?
Tell me.
10 to 20 bucks. She has not increased her wage. So this recovery has not gotten down to the street, nor has it gotten to the police,
gotcha,
who police the streets.
Absolutely.
Because when you add in the 10% cut that police took
right
before the bankruptcy, and then this new contract, let's see, in 2014, they restored 5%, no, 8%, and then 6.5%, and then 2.5%, and 2.5%. With inflation, you're making what you did a decade ago.
Less.
This bankrupt, plus your bennies are gone. or less. So wait, where the guys that do and gals that do the work, policing in Detroit, are losing. Losing. What recovery? What comeback? I ask you, it's an easy one. It's called a fucking softball.
The money has not gone into public safety. Simple as that.
Oh, let's leave it at that. Now watch what it does to morale. This is a super cop. We changed his voice because he's shit scared to lose his job because they're very vindictive downtown, right? He was not cleared to do this. It's he and I. Bob, go ahead.
It certainly exceeded my expectations. I mean, you talk about a steady decline in crime for 3 years. In the 3 years that I've been here, I give the vast majority of credit to this team.
So what's going on out here? I mean, we're being told like we should be holding a parade because crime's falling so much. Is it falling?
You're still getting your shootings. You're still getting aggravated assaults. You know, there's not many police officers out here anymore. The wages aren't there. The benefits aren't there. The pension's not there. So they're getting offers from these suburban cities and they leave. They tend to be less proactive. And that's what you're dealing with now. Less proactive officers. Officers that aren't trained properly. Officers that do not want to engage with criminals in the fear of getting in trouble, making a mistake, and end up in jail.
Show up, you made a run, but you don't take a report. There's no crime. No one's harmed. It's wearing the shield. Live another day. Move along.
I agree.
That's kind of an ugly little secret.
Yeah. The numbers are there. You're seeing the crime. You're seeing the complaints.
But I don't see no cruisers out there.
Those days are done.
Say what?
Those days are done. The days of officers being proactive and going out here and being aggressive and putting a bad guy in jail, it's over.
Fuck.
Why should I go out here and get in a foot chase? Injure myself, and the city's not going to back me. No health insurance when I retire.
If you could go back to the young you, would you do this job again?
If I knew we were going to be where we're at now, no, I would not. Who would have ever thought that you're going to lose your health insurance and your retirement was going to get cut in half and your pensions were going to be where they are now?
Well, look, that's all money, but look, it's fucking buck wild out here, and you don't get a whole lot of respect. Is that true?
That's true.
What's true?
That we don't get respect anymore. And is it because that law enforcement throughout the country is not respected, or is it because they just don't respect BPD officers?
Ever been shot at?
Yes.
What's that like?
Something anybody can never imagine. It's scary. Cause a lot of heartache on you, your family.
I see billionaires getting handouts. I see cops losing ground. And I see widows get stuck with the bill. It's fucking outrageous what it is.
Sad, isn't it? It's unbelievable. What can you do?
Why don't you fucking tell me, man? I'm driving around with you and you tell the world what can we do.
What can we do? The mayor needs to step up. You're not going to have a big city unless you have a good police department. You're not going to have this wonderful city you're talking about building without having police officers out here. You need to make the officers happy.
He wouldn't do it again. That'd be a huge loss to the city.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so just going backwards here, I was taking some notes as, you know, I was listening to the interview you had with one of my guys. And, well, first of all, I got to tell you, I really wish you didn't pick the Lollipop Guild voice-changing technology.
As we get more advertisers, we can get a new voice-changing machine.
Yeah, and, you know, if anybody wants to donate some sound recording equipment.
Say, yeah.
And you had the window open in the car, so
I had to dig out that shit out of the footlocker. But yeah,
you know, he hit the nail on the head, man. I mean, the reality here is simple. It's very simple. We talk about the rebirth of the city of Detroit. We talk about the, you know, what the city used to be and the direction it's going. And guys, I got to tell you, Detroit does not look like the Detroit it was 10 years ago, right? The downtown area, and I'll be very clear on that, the downtown area.
And Midtown.
In Midtown. Yeah. Right? That area.
That's it.
It looks great. It sure. Really, and it has come so far. And I got to tell you, as a Detroiter, I'm proud of that, right? But let's just call it like it is. If we're talking about attracting people to come to our metropolis, we're talking about citizens who have left, right? You mentioned that earlier, less than 700,000 residents, or at least people who are reporting that they live in Detroit. We're talking about a situation where people want to live where they feel safe. And if you can't, and I don't know, last time you checked on what it costs to actually buy a condo down in Detroit, but we're looking at over $300,000. And let's just be blunt, and not everyone's paying the wages to afford, definitely not to our cops, right? Our cops can't afford to live down there. But if we're looking at trying to rebuild the city of Detroit, I don't know. Maybe it's just me as a cop. Maybe I'm a little jaded after 24 years, but I'm going to just call it like it is. You build it on a foundation of public safety. I want to go where I feel
exactly.
Safe.
Exactly.
That's it.
That's how they
pitch. It seems to be backwards here.
It exactly. It's bizarro world. That's how they pitched the bankruptcy, was for public safety and quality of life.
And then I get the complaints from the mayor's office about why, you know, these officers who are leaving Detroit, they're coming in and they're getting trained. They're getting this great. I'm telling you guys, I'm not just saying this because I'm a Detroit cop. I'm saying this because it's a fact. We give out the best training in the state, maybe in the nation, when it comes down to our police academy.
Because they have to.
Well,
absolutely. Well, our guys are coming. Cops. You better bet. Well, their guys are going right into the fire, right out of the box.
Let's go for real here, okay? You got cops that overwork doing double shifts. It just sounds to me like the Bing administration, and nothing changed since the bankruptcy. I'll give you some numbers. Numbers, people. A decade ago, when Lehman Brothers collapsed, Detroit police made 30,000 arrests. 5 years ago, when Chief Craig got here, 15,000 arrests. Last year, less than 10,000 arrests. That tells me the police force isn't going out there and stopping a drive-by before it happens.
You're talking about proactive patrol, right?
Well, that's what proactive, yeah. We've heard it a lot. That means going out there.
Keep bringing it up. We'll beat it
put
up.
Put your head on a swivel. And see who's looking, who's right. Creeping around the liquor store.
Well, let me just give you the
green light don't work.
Let me give you this number that when Bing was in office, we had 2,500 police officers.
We're gonna have to have police.
Now we have 1,600. We're
gonna have to pay
less,
them
roughly 1,000 less police officers now. So we need to get our cops to stay here.
And does it burn your ass to hear about a surplus? About
we're
coming back. We're building this. We're giving sugar and sweeteners over there. Does it burn your ass?
It absolutely does, and that's one of the things I scream to the heavens. How in the world, you know, when I look at a $53 million surplus, the city is boasting, and I look at the mayor's been, he's been a solid guy with me. I'm not going to sit here and take shots at him. You know, whatever your relationship is with him, it is what it is.
What do you got to do? What do you care about? No, I mean, my relationship.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he's been good.
My relationship.
He's been good.
Your but organization's on that note, terrible.
You've been good. You got nothing. You got nothing.
But on that
you're,
note,
you're playing politics.
Not at all. Hardly.
What'd you get? You got nothing.
I'm getting skinny on this.
Oh, come on.
The reality is,
come on.
I can tell him all day long that he needs public safety, and when he says he has
but
a
$53 million
surplus.
He doesn't have it.
He says he has a $53 million surplus. What did I just say? Retiree health insurance costs
$40 million.
$40 million. So I see that surplus is once again on the shoulders, on the backs of my cops, my retirees, my firefighters who lost that. That's that surplus.
And in the end, this comes down to the people who you serve. Yes, you're human beings, and that's what we try to do here. But it's the people. It's Mrs. Jones. Of the East Side, who needs a cop, who not getting any help.
Now, that's the part right there that really burns my ass, too. To be very candid, the fact that we take an oath to provide the best public safety to our citizens and everyone who steps foot in the borders of the city of Detroit, and the fact that we are so overworked that our officers are working, like you said, 16-hour shifts just to compensate for the lack of personnel we have to go out there and answer these police runs.
It's so quiet because when they forced officers to do 12 hours, it was a national story.
Yeah.
Now we got officers stacked up in that car for 16 hours.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks for that. Let's not forget our brothers and sisters in the fire department here.
Absolutely.
Our fellow citizens. It is the 10-year anniversary of the death of firefighter Walt Harris, a guy that I befriended. I got to town and I got to know him, and half a year later, he's dead. A guy named Mario Willis paid his handyman $20 to light his house on fire so he could collect the insurance. He got 44 to 68 years, I believe. So his appeal was yesterday to lessen the sentence. And as part of our ongoing education of Joe the intern from Specs Howard, we sent him to the courthouse to cover this story. And he didn't quite get it at first. He showed up where I was working in a filthy shirt, a rain hat, his shirt misbuttoned, hanging out. He basically looked like the Morton Salt girl on the container if she was like a pedophile crack addict. Not saying that Joe is, but Joe, first thing is I'm not a guy for suits and starched shirts, but we're going to get you a clean one. We're going to get you a clean shirt. So anyway, you got that, Bob?
Yep.
So Joe, the intern, goes to court. The meat and potatoes are reporting to do the follow-up on Walt Harris's murderer. And in the spirit of 9/11, I'll never forget that, and I'll never forget Walt. So go ahead and play that, Bob.
My intern. These are working guys here, Joe.
How you doing?
Who actually get paid.
Good to meet you.
He's not at the courthouse. He's at the Coney Island.
Actually getting paid.
Yes.
Good money.
Maybe.
Well.
Maybe. How are you, bro?
Man.
I called you. They got firemen over there.
Yeah, I was talking to them.
Did you record them?
You know what, man? I forgot to record. I talked to them, but it was not.
I'm going to yell at you. Like, the whole show is about public safety, Joe.
Yeah.
And there was firefighters there, public safety, Joe.
When I talked to them, I got some real good statements from them.
Did you get it on tape?
But I forgot to actually turn on the recorder.
You're a fucking dumbass, man. What are you doing? Okay, so we talked to the hard hat here. This is my intern. All right. We're doing this podcast on public safety in Detroit.
Okay.
At the courthouse, a minister who paid a bum to light his house on fire for the insurance, paid him $20. The house collapsed on my friend, a firefighter, killed him. That's murder. He doing 44 years, two consecutive lives. Now he's in there groveling, trying to get his sentence reduced.
For what?
Yeah, for what?
The fireman told me it was 68 years.
44 to 68. But how would we know? You didn't fucking record him, Joe. I sent him, it's easy, and Joe misses it. Now get back over there and go find those guys.
Dang. He said go in, turn left, talk to the dude at the desk, and I just had to sign in, write down that I was working for Charlie, and blam, I'm in. I didn't know it could be that easy, but here you go.
He's at the courthouse.
So we're going in, and we're going to go to the courtroom and
his filthy shirt.
Show to begin.
Calling case number 0902-8750, People versus Mario Willis, on the docket today for resentencing. Appearances, please.
Good afternoon, Your Honor.
I don't believe that the guidelines adequately reflect the severity of the offense. And I am going to go above the guidelines, 450 to 700 months on the murder two. I'm going to keep the same sentence of 10 to 20 on the arson. He will receive 3,145 days credit for time already served. And all the costs and fees previously assessed will remain in effect, and if they've already been paid, then they've been paid.
So you got four less years.
All I want is for Mr. Willis to realize what he has taken from this family, and I want him to realize that it's time to put an end to this. He could do so much more good by being honest about his responsibility in this event. And I wish that he would show some character and some courage and some integrity and just let this family have some peace. Mr. Willis put this scheme in motion. He used somebody else to try to be the fall guy if things went bad, and he showed no character. He showed no integrity. He's trying to use other people, manipulate other people, just like he's trying to manipulate the court today, just like he's trying to manipulate the Harris family, both at the trial, original trial, and today, saying he had no responsibility in this, where overwhelming evidence shows that he was the man that put this whole thing in motion.
Well, you know what? A person that wears the shield is no better than any of the rest of us. But if you can kill a public safety worker with impunity, well, what does that mean for the safety of the rest of us? So as far as I'm concerned, Mr. Willis could rot in hell.
You know, you take into consideration what you're taking. Look, murder's bad. I don't think I need to tell you.
Yeah, murder's like probably the worst thing you can do.
But when you really think about it, when you're killing someone who's out there saving lives, you're not killing one person. We're losing more than just one life, that person's life. We're losing all the lives that person dedicates his life to actually saving. It's a huge ripple effect when you think about that.
Did you hear that, Joe?
Yeah, I heard that. That's serious. That's a serious impact.
That's why you got to take this. You got to take the fucking job seriously, Joe.
Every life he would have saved may not get saved now because he was killed in action.
Yeah, but I almost was going to kill you in action because you fucked up and didn't even record it, man. Like, that's journalism 101.
Well, I got the important part. I got the actual hearing, and you just heard the beginning and end of it. I had to sit there and listen to the whole entire thing and try to pretend like I'm being objective while holding back tears, because I actually loved Walter Harris. Harris, I worked at the fire department shop, and I've seen him 2-3 times a week, and we talked. And when life was getting me down and things were not going right in my case, he always had the right words of wisdom for me. And whatever it was, he was always happy and cheerful. And I'm fighting back tears now because he was just a cool dude, man. He did not deserve to go down like that. So how do I maintain objectivity as a so-called reporter? Which I didn't go to reporter school. I went to broadcast school. It's a little different. I'm supposed to be behind the camera, not in front of it. But I'm trying to maintain objectivity. The Willis's whole entire family was there. They outnumbered Walter Harris's family 3-1.
Joe,
you know.
Yeah, I can understand your pain here, Joe. We all feel it. But don't you think you could have put a clean shirt and maybe a tie on?
His shirt was clean at the beginning of the day. As you know, clothes get dirty as you work through life and touch things.
What were you doing, Joe?
It's about the journey, not the destination.
What did you do?
No, like, it's not. Were this you cleaning? Sucked and you failed.
Were you cleaning out, like, a toilet at a rest stop or something? Or what happened to the shirt?
The shirt wasn't that bad. I don't know why.
Dude, we're gonna post it online, dude. I'm a trained reporter. It was filthy. Filthy. Next time, get there early. Wear a clean shirt. Okay, listen to what's being said.
It's radio. It's not supposed to, you know.
You're representing the podcast, Joe. I'm not a big suit guy, but yeah, I'm for clean underpants.
No bullshit news.
You hear that, Joe?
Yeah.
But I appreciate your moxie, man, going back there and getting it, because I do believe you're only one of two reporters in that courtroom. In the city of Detroit, for a fallen...
You're not my supervisor!
For a fallen, you know, public safety worker. I'm glad that you did it and that we were on it, and that's the difference between news and no bullshit news. We will not forget. Is that right, Joe?
Right. The mainstream media has already forgotten. None of them were there.
Well, you're mainstream media, Joe. You're now mainstream media. See, I'm telling you, Mark, we can take Joe. Anybody can do reporting. Just got to have a heart for it. We can take Joe. What do you make it, Joe? $9 an hour?
Where?
What do you mean, where?
What are you paying me?
I'm not paying you shit. You're an intern.
Okay, then.
And you know what? I'm overpaying you, Joe. Okay, you got to work on this. Listen, I appreciate you doing
idiots.
It, Joe. I appreciate you doing it, Joe. Good work. All right?
All right. See you next time.
Okay. See you, Joe.
Yeah.
Okay, we hit the hour mark. Hey, Diaz, thanks for coming, man.
Oh, You bet.
You got support here. Pay the police. Hire police. Pay the firefighters, paramedics. Right? Share some of the wealth. Middle class has not gotten that in the last 10 years. And that's why you're seeing the world the way it is.
We have a surplus. It's time to reinvest it back into public safety. Simple as that.
I would think so. All right. So until next week, thanks for listening. And take us out with something, Bob. Please not Joe Walsh.
That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast.
Whoop, whoop.
That's the sound of the police.
Whoop, whoop.
That's the sound of the beast.
Care as one.
See it that way.